We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Retail sales have fallen and unemployment has skyrocketed because of the COVID-19 pandemic. But how are we going to recover economically after this is all over? That's becoming a growing concern. And joining me now with the answer to some of those questions is Dr. Michael Lee of the Schema Business School. Thank you for joining me today, Doctor. I really appreciate it. So tell us a little bit about the Schema Business School.
The Schema Business School is actually a global business school. It's based in France, but we have quite a number of locations around the world, including Raleigh, North Carolina. We have a location in China. We have a location in Brazil. And we also have a location in South Africa. And we have many, many different business programs that might be of interest to people out there who are interested in business education.
Now, first of all, tell us, how bad is the global economic crisis because of COVID-19, because of the pandemic?
I think most of us know that, all of us are affected by it in one way or the other. We're all at stay-at-home orders. And at the same time, I think some of us would have lost our jobs in the process. So as a result, I think this global pandemic is, in fact, quite bad for everybody. It's one of those situations where, there's a lot of uncertainty. There's a lot of, fear. And probably more importantly, the future is kind of hanging in the air at the moment.
Is the economy suffering worse in some areas compared to others?
Yes, I think in terms of the infection rates, it is actually quite varied depending on the geographic location you're in, depending on the population density. I think the whole world has sort of turned to a particular strategy on all of this. It's what we call this controlled adaptation strategy, whereby we try and detect whether people have the virus. So we do a lot of testing. We support that with a lot of isolation. From an international perspective, we've actually put on a lot of travel restrictions. We have a lot of border restrictions. At the same time, we're appealing to the public, trying to be transparent about everything. And, civic engagement is really important, this whole situation, to try and manage the spread of the virus and try to keep it at bay while trying to ensure that our hospitals can also cope with the number of cases that might arise and go through.
Okay, now as we start to get back on track, as we start to come out of this pandemic and start to get the economy running back again, what are some of the first steps that need to be taken to get the economy back on track?
Well, I think what we were talking about before was just the first stages of trying to control this pandemic. We're entering the second phase whereby a lot of the, restrictions, stay-at-home orders are being relaxed at the moment. And we're seeing this, again, in varied forms, in varied states and in varied locations, and in fact, also in varied countries around the world. But we're seeing some other areas in the country, for example, in Atlanta, Georgia, or for example, we have other states which are now sort of opening up in a phased approach. These states are usually sort of opening up on a basis of, a quarter at a time. So, opening up 25% of retail and anything that was closed before to, certain states who are just sort of opening up everything. But at the same time, we've got a lot of, people out there who will be, in fact, sort of thinking about whether they want to open or not. So it's sort of two sides to the story. One is the regulation, and secondly, the willingness for businesses and so on to expose themselves to the risks. So, yes, we're in that phase at the moment. And I think it's going to take some time before we get the confidence of everyone to get there. There's a huge, huge spectrum of people in terms of fear and how, you know, people want to approach this. You know, there are some, perhaps some who are taking a very cautious approach and certainly still abiding by some stay-at-home orders. But there are others who are going out there and trying to get their lives back to what was supposedly normal beforehand. And so we kind of witness a wide spectrum from the sense that some people are still staying at home. We have other people who are, you know, protesting, I think, trying to get themselves back into an order. So, you know, as we go through this phase, I think quite a number of things need to happen. First of all, I think we need to be sure that the mental health and the well-being of all are going to be taken into account. I mean, social unrest is not a good thing, and we're seeing sort of pockets of that happening in parts of the country. Then we see in other parts of the world where they're also taking the phased approach to opening. And again, that's so varied. You've got countries like Italy who are opening up, you know, stage by stage, but we've got countries like Sweden who are basically opening things up at 100%. So, you know, this variation allows us to sort of think about what might happen as we go through this opening up of the economy. At the same time, you know, this opening up is at the risk of the equity of access and the health support that we might get, because there are fears that a second, you know, second round of this virus may come about as a result of people opening up the economy. And so I think things like, you know, clarity of communication are going to be really important as we go forward. In terms of the economic impact, I think this is something that most of us will be quite disappointed at over the medium to long term. Reason being, you know, at the moment, a lot of us are being supported. In fact, those of us who are on the PPP program, for example, are being supported by the federal government, you know, getting their payments. And so, you know, as a result, even though there are people in bad situations, there are also news that some of these recipients are in fact doing better than they were prior to the crisis. And so, you know, we're in, if you like, a phase of not perhaps really realizing what that might mean for us in the future, medium to long term. And so as a result, this recovery may in fact take us a lot longer than we think it is. And like I said, reason being, we're supported at the moment by the government. And as that support sort of winds down, then, you know, unless people have sort of done something about it, and unless the economy has sort of regained, you know, a certain level of activity, we're going to see a prolonged, you know, sort of agony. Those of us who are also on support, don't forget that, you know, those funds need to be paid back at some point in the future. And so, like I said, the realization of all of that is going to come down the track. And I sort of feel that, you know, it could be, in fact, an 18 months to 3 year time horizon before we sort of get, you know, to any notion of normal, certainly to any notion of normal, you know, sort of prior to 2020. But more importantly, I also think that in the future, the economic activity will actually shift in terms of, you know, what is going to be important in the economy for the future. And so what things look like today and what things look like prior to 2020, you know, may not be valid as we go through this structural change that's going on.
On a global scale, will some countries fare better than others when it comes to getting their economies back up and running?
Well, I think that might be the case, depending on the approach that they take. Certainly, it depends on the second wave that we've been talking about. So if certain countries have taken a phased approach whereby, you know, they're instituting maybe 25% of activity to come online at any one point in time, there might be some sort of success in getting their economies back up and running, you know, within a 1 year to 3 year time horizon. However, if certain countries take a sort of all or nothing approach and basically go for it all, they might see a second wave sort of come through. And as a result, they may have to close down the economy at the moment. Now, one of the things that we're not really certain about, for example, you know, what will climate and seasons have to do with all of this? They are saying in the press that given that we're going through into the summer season, that, you know, this will sort of temper any second wave that might come through, but there's no actual data or proof about that at this point in time. At the same time, you know, if we're looking at countries not just in the Northern Hemisphere, which is about to approach summer, but countries, you know, in the Southern Hemisphere, that could be a test case for us to see sort of what happens. Now, there are quite a number of countries, certainly in South Africa and in Australia and also in South America, that are about to head into their winter seasons. And so we should observe what happens on that front. Now, at the same time, given that most of these countries have had their restrictions and lockdowns early to try and contain the virus through this control adaptation, they may not see, you know, they may not see too much of a flare up as they go into the winter season. So it really, really does depend on a whole number of factors that I guess, you know, a lot of the research scientists and so on are trying to find answers to at the moment. And there's not a lot of answers to those right now. So I think a lot of the analysts, and certainly the financial markets are starting to sort of think about, you know, this recovery as being, you know, maybe a 1 to 3 year sort of time horizon, given that we have a lot of major companies who are struggling at the moment. We have a lot of layoffs. We have a lot of industries that certainly need to go through a lot of change in the future. Given all of this, yes, a 1 to 3 year time period is probably what we're looking at. And to some extent, that disappointment hasn't been sort of baked in at this point because, you know, we've been propped up by the Fed with a lot of the PPP and also, you know, a lot of the liquidity that the federal government is actually injecting into the market. So we have sort of good support here. And certainly that's also the case with a lot of countries around the world where, you know, their governments are providing a lot of liquidity into the economy so that, you know, people can sort of put food on the table and think about things. But I think probably the more interesting question that, you know, this conversation sort of begs, you know, is in fact, you know, what are strategies for some of these people who are in PPP programs at the moment, who are unemployed at the moment? You know, what should they do for the future and how should they sort of recover from all of this?
And speaking of the future, where is all this money going to come from? I know the government is propping up a lot of the economy right now. What happens to the government in the future? Are they going to start cutting back on programs or are they going to raise taxes? How are they going to pay for all of this?
Well, at this point in time, you know, the government is providing a lot of liquidity through the printing press. Now, in the future, as you know, a lot of companies were taking, you know, sort of loan program, you know, small business loan programs and so on, do have to pay it back. So, you know, as a result, it will sort of happen. One of the advantages that U.S. Actually has is the fact that it is world currency. And so as a result, one of the implications of trying to print money is not so much too important right now. In fact, if we go back to the global financial crisis, which was back in 2008 to 2011, we can see that the federal government did actually, you know, print a lot of money during that time. And there were all sorts of fears about inflation and so on that was going to sort of haunt us for the future. But that hasn't occurred. And so I guess on that premise, the government is not too fearful about that right now, given that inflation is under control. Because, as you know, with the unemployment rate sort of skyrocketing, I think we have some, you know, 12% or so of our economy at the moment running at unemployment versus you know, the normal amount of, you know, around about 3 to 4% previous to this. It's going to be one of those things where demand is not going to be there, certainly as the crisis sort of lifts. And so inflation may not be an occur. So how are they going to pay for it? Well, hopefully, you know, as people get their jobs back, as productivity comes online, as companies get back online through taxes, things are going to happen. And as a result, hopefully our economy is going to be back to, you know, some sense of normal.
Now, you say that you don't expect the U.S. economy to be back right away, to be back in full action right away. Will it ever come back to its full capacity pre-COVID-19 pandemic?
Well, I certainly think it will. However, I personally think that the economy will look very different to what it does today. And so as a result, you know, we're going to have a lot more, I guess, changes in the manufacturing that we do. We're going to have a lot of differences in the logistics that we provide, the transportation that we do. I think we are going to have a lot of difference in the way that travel, leisure is going to occur. And certainly, I think there's a move in the economy towards more IT and certainly more technology in terms of how we create that productivity and we create, you know, the profits and we also create that gross domestic product that we're all looking at.
Okay, so doctor, what type of strategies do people need to start formulating going forward?
I think that a lot of people are spending a lot of time at home at the moment under lockdown orders. So there is time for them to think about their careers going forward and how they might pivot or adjust or adapt to perhaps a new economy as we're emerging from it. I mean, there are a lot of restaurant workers at home. There are probably a lot of service workers at home. There are probably a lot of travel and leisure workers at home. you know, all of these people may want to start thinking about strategies going forward. Now, most of the jobs at the moment are really in the research and healthcare professional areas. There's also a move to a lot of online education, in fact, and some workers may want to think about, you know, looking at online education. Writers are very important. Food delivery is very important. Data specialists, communication specialists are also sort of in demand. Nurses, administrative support, social media responses and so on are sort of in demand at the moment. And so, you know, perhaps depending on what industry you're in, you may want to think about, you know, pivoting that through, you know, further education or even volunteering and getting a lot of experience through that volunteer work that might sort of position you better as we come offline, as those opportunities sort of create themselves as the economy sort of adapts and evolves in the next year or two.
Dr. Michael Lee from the Schema Business School, and we've been talking about how we're going to get the economy back up and running after the COVID-19 pandemic. So thanks once again for joining me today, Doctor. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you very much, Stephen.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.